Behavioral Health Integrations podcast strives to inspire the next generation of mental health and addiction specialists. Our aim is to continue to raise awareness and encourage collaboration in the mental health and addiction industry so that it will continue to thrive. There are numerous approaches to treating mental health and substance abuse issues. On this show, we take pleasure in showcasing the diversity of these approaches used to improve the lives of others. So without further ado, your host, Jacob Minnig.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Behavior Health Integration episode. Today, I have a very special guest, Chester Elton. Chester has a passion for helping organizations build an all-in type of culture at the workplace. Chester has a lot of experience when it comes to helping improve workplace environments, relieve stress and mental health symptoms in the workplace, as well as how to handle stressful situations that come up when it comes to two individuals arguing in the workplace, conflict, mediation, and so much more. Chester is a best-selling author, executive coach, and keynote speaker. I, for one, am truly excited to have Chester on the show. So without further ado, let's get started. Chester, again, thank you so much for being on my show, man. I greatly appreciate it.
Pleasure to be here.
Again, I'm a huge fan of yours. You know, I see your stuff on LinkedIn, YouTube. I know you're no stranger to podcasts and everything. And I'm very intrigued by your experience when it comes to like management and workplace stress and anxiety. And I'm, again, grateful for you to be here.
No, listen, I think it's an important message. You know, mental health still has a huge stigma attached to it. And my co-author, Adrian Gosick, and I, anything we can do to help remove that stigma, make it easier to talk about, I think is going to be helpful for people.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure you can give tremendous perspective, not only on, let's say, the average worker, but let's say the new manager or the seasoned manager on how to handle stressful, anxiety-provoking situations.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, in our book, and by the way, a little background on the book, you know, we have a third author on this book, which we've never had before, Adrian's son, Anthony Gostick. It was Anthony that really pushed us to write the book. He said, you know, your generation never talks about anxiety. My generation, we start every conversation with, how are you doing? You should take a real hard look at that.
Yeah.
And we did, and found it to be fascinating.
And what's the name of the book again?
Anxiety at Work. Pretty simple. Eight strategies to deal with workplace anxiety.
Well, to start it off too, are there different types of workplace anxiety? Like it's not just one thing, but it could be a bunch of different things.
Absolutely. You know, we talk about the number one cause of workplace anxiety is uncertainty. I just don't know what's going on. You know, it really highlighted in the pandemic, right? When all the rules were changing. Are we coming to work? Are we staying home? Are we vaccinated? Are we not vaccinated? Are you double vaxxed? You know, can you prove your vaccination? And a lot of people were then worried about, look, how's the company doing? Are we going to survive? Do I have a future here? How am I doing? So one of the first things that we encourage managers and companies to do is to reduce uncertainty is over-communicate. You know, make sure that you're really keeping people as up to date as you can. Now, certain things, you know, by law, you can't talk about, right? If you're going through a merger or acquisition, and that always causes a lot of anxiety because are we acquiring somebody or are we being acquired? There's a big difference, right? So we tell companies and managers, say, look, if you think you're over-communicating, it's probably about right. If you're over-communicating, it's probably about right. So this idea of regular updates and different ways that you put out the messages, you know, you may have a Slack channel, you may have a weekly kind of newsletter that you put out, you may have firesides with the CEO, and hopefully you're having pretty regular team meetings as well. So anything you can do to reduce anxiety, we say, look, if I'm an employee, I want the answer to certain questions. One is, how's the company doing? Where are we going? How am I doing? And do I have a future here? And boy, if I can get the answer to those four questions on a regular basis, my anxiety is going to go down. I'm going to be able to concentrate on what's really important. And that's, you know, the work that needs to get done today.
You know, it's funny though. I can imagine like the, we'll call them the regular worker, where it's just like, you know, I'm too afraid to ask. So again, I just won't and just hope everything's going to be okay.
Right. And see, what's really important about that, what you just said, Jacob, is that in a void, the void gets filled, right? That's nature. And when you don't know what's going on, the void in communication gets filled with fear, innuendo, and rumors. And none of those are very productive, right?
Yeah, it's funny, too, a little personal experience. There's times where I'll put on the pounds, let's say, and I will be afraid to, like, jump on the scale because, again, I don't want to know and I know it's going to be bad.
That's right. I'm going to skip today, fast all day tomorrow, and then I'll weigh myself in.
Yeah, in the hopes that you'll just lose weight and things will be better. But it's like, if you're not going to face your fear, then how are you going to make improvements, though?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. No, and I love what you said about over-communication, because I also feel like it helps with everyone being on the same page.
It does, you know, and it does cut down on the, well, what do you think they really meant by that? You know, that kind of thing. So really encourage leaders, answer those four questions. You know, I'll tell you another thing that's really great is when you pair young workers with seasoned workers. You know, you've got a mentor, you've got a guide, so to speak, somebody that knows how to get things done, you know, and can interpret for you, really, in a lot of ways. You know, I was listening to a really interesting podcast. The guy says every story, you know, every movie has a victim, a villain, a hero, and a guide. And, you know, you see it like, you know, in Star Wars, right? Obi-Wan is the guide, right? Luke Skywalker is the hero, and on and on. It's really interesting that if you've got a guide at work, it reduces a lot of anxiety. Somebody who knows how to get things done, knows the rituals, knows the traditions, you know, knows who the real power brokers are, and can get answers for you. So we find that to be a very, very helpful tactic, particularly with new hires. Pair them up with somebody, a guide, an interpreter. Makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And with business plans, too, do you feel like it has a lot to do with the hierarchy, too, where let's say you have the owner, you have the directors, you have the supervisors, and everybody kind of sticks to their own role and stays in their own lane? Does that make sense?
That can happen. I'll tell you, it's been known for, you know, decades now that the number one impact that you have on your personal engagement and productivity is your relationship with your immediate supervisor. So, you know, you get all the messages from the senior VPs, and certainly the CEO will put out missives, but you really are counting on your immediate supervisor to give you the straight scoop, right? So it's really important that those direct supervisors are really well equipped to be able to identify and then help with, you know, mental health in the workplace and specifically anxiety.
So, you know, Chester, I'm going to try to paint a picture right now. So majority of the jobs that I've had in the past, well, in the mental health field, have been the basic, we'll say, treatment center. And you have your counselors and you have your clients. And I love how you brought that up, because I want to get into scenario time, and I would love to use your amazing brain to help me out with this.
Sure.
Let's throw in a scenario of, again, this is what actually happened to me. Let's say you got internally promoted, right? So now you went from being a primary counselor to the counselor supervisor.
Right.
And people aren't happy, Chester. They're not happy. One in particular, where the facility you'll be going to, she wanted the job. So now you're there, and now there starts to be some, we'll say, passive-aggressive conflict. Where, let's say that counselor is older than you, she has more experience than you, so she's still upset that she didn't get the job or wasn't considered. So she continues to undermine you. She doesn't go to you for advice or for rules or policy stuff. She goes to the director. Again, how do you handle that situation if you're the director, knowing that there's conflict between that counselor and the supervisor?
Okay, so you're asking me about the director's position, not you, not her, but the director.
Yeah, because it's not the supervisor's fault that he got the job. What was he supposed to do? Not take it, right?
Right. And yeah, no, listen, this is not an uncommon scenario. Mm-hmm. I would give you recommendations in two places. A, if it's a good director, the director is going to call you both in and say, look, here are the rules of the road. You know, mm-hmm. this person got promoted. You didn't. Whether that's fair or not, it's what it is. Now, here's how we work together and here's how we make decisions. Now, if you can't abide by that, that's okay. But you don't jump. You don't jump over your supervisor, over your director. Now, learn this lesson from Alan Mulally. He's the guy that saved the Ford Motor Company back in 2008. Brilliant, brilliant leader. He'd say, look, here are the rules. Here's how we treat each other. Here's how we communicate. Here's how we make decisions. Now, if you can't do that, that's okay. Like literally, if you can't do that, that's okay. Now, you can't work here anymore. So you need to make a decision. You know, are you going to abide by the rules? Now, on the director's side, where you're getting caught in the middle, the recommendation of the directors or to the supervisor is you've got to go to the director and say, look, I'm getting undermined by this person who wanted this job and didn't get it.
Yes.
And it's causing me all kinds of problems. So yes. I need you to lay down the rules of the road. And again, be really specific about it. Now, often in cases like this, in the scenario you've pointed out, is seasoned person, valuable to the organization, knows how to get things done. And so we say, well, we'll kind of manage around it. No, you need to talk about it right away. You need to figure it out right away. And if she can't make or he can't make those changes, you need to coach him out. Yep. Like literally, you need to remove him because it'll only get worse. And, you know, they're not going to be happy. You're not happy. The director's not going to be happy.
Yeah.
Your patients are going to suffer. So mm-hmm. in scenarios like that, it's really important to address it right away. And it should start with the director. And if it doesn't, the supervisor needs to go to the director and say, hey, look, I'm being undermined. This actually happened to me and Adrian.
Wow.
When we were building a training company, we had a trainer that was great, very talented, constantly going over our heads, constantly. Wow. So finally we sat down and said, hey, look, what's the deal here? Does he report to us or does he report to you? Because he mm-hmm. thinks he reports to you. He's not listening to us. He goes, no, that's ridiculous. He reports to you. I said, great. Will you tell him that? Will you make sure he knows that?
Yeah.
Because he doesn't know. And by the way, it got worse and worse and worse. And we kept him because he was very talented. Clients liked him. Finally, we had to make a call and we let him go. And you know what happened, Jacob? What? The next year we had our best year ever.
Voila.
Yeah, because there was no more, you know, oh, gosh, you know, what do we do about this situation? We can't correct him because he'll just go to our boss's boss.
Yep.
Right. And it's very, very, very toxic. I will say, too, and I in retrospect, I really felt badly for him because he got bad advice. He had a bad mentor. He had a mentor that said, hey, here's how you stir the pot. Here's how you get what you want. Here's how you screw these guys. And he believed mm-hmm. him. Because he thought in his self-interest, he could then climb the ladder over the bodies of his managers, right?
Yeah.
And it's never a good idea. So nip it in the bud, but great scenario.
Which again, Chester, thank you so much for saying that because that really means a lot to me where me as a new supervisor, that's what I always thought should have happened. But again, she never had my back as in the director. And again, that counselor kept going over my head. She even like started like, let's say, talking crap to me through text to the director. And the director told me. So again, my emotions just came out. Just like, one, why are you telling me this? And two, how are we going to handle this? And she wanted me to handle the situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was just incredible. Bad.
Oh, yeah. Not uncommon. What happened in our case is the guy went to our CEO. And said, by the way, Chester wants your job. He's under my, and which couldn't have been further from the truth. That was the last job in the world mm-hmm. I wanted. And finally, the CEO called me and says, we got a problem. I said, yeah, no, I've been telling you for months.
Yeah.
What do we do about it? He says, if you want to let him go, it's okay by me. I said, great. So we did.
Okay. And how do I say this? Now, looking at it from a different point of view, do you think sometimes companies don't do that because of the workforce where we're just so short on staff where we just have to put up with the negativity longer because, again, there's nobody out there to
hire on to replace that person.
I think you're spot on. You know, okay. Say, look, if we let her go, she actually knows how to get stuff done, and she's a pain in the neck, but she's worth it. No, she's not.
Exactly.
She's just not. And he's not, you know, whether it's a man or a woman or anybody in between, it's really interesting. It undermines everything that you're about. What are you about? You're about serving people. You're about helping people. And you've got somebody that's a counselor that is undermining people and causing problems, and it's not worth it. You know, it's really interesting. I'm convinced there's about 10% of the sales force or the workforce that it would make more sense to pay them to stay home. You know, and it would be worth that expense to get them out of the workplace.
Chester, you know what's funny? Because again, everybody thought this way about this counselor. And again, I don't mean to be talking crap about her or anything, but it's like me and everyone else, we were willing to take her caseload over just to get rid of her. I'll take on more clients just to get her out of here.
Yeah. And it's what happened with us in our little company. We said, gosh, if we don't have this trainer, how will we fill all that work? Well, we found a way not only to fill all that work, but we got twice as much the next year. So it's, you know, Adrian and I, everything we do starts with culture. And if you don't know what your mission, vision, and values are, you have no guidelines. Yeah. If you do know what your mission, vision, and values are, then it's easy to hold up the mirror and say, hey, is this counselor living up to our values, which is transparency, integrity, honesty, you know, support, whatever your values are. And if they're not, then it's really easy. You pull them in and say, look, these are our values. You're not living them. Now, I want to give you time to work it out. And if you can't live these values, that's okay. Like, seriously, if you can't do it, let me know. Now, you can't work here. And it's really interesting. In talking to Alan Mulally, he said, you know, I never fired anybody.
Yes.
I never fired anybody. They'd come to me and say, you know what, Al, I just can't do it. He said, you know what? Love you. Wish you well. Give you a great recommendation. Can you give me 2 weeks or whatever? I'd say, great. Left on great terms. No mysteries, no surprises. You know, and some people can't. Look, not everybody's cut out for healthcare.
Yep.
Right? Not everybody's cut out to be a manager or a supervisor or a director. And when you find out that that's the case, it's okay.
Well,
seriously, it's okay.
Chester, I would love to ask you for some advice right now. And this is for all, Chester, all the people who get offered their first management job like me or supervisor job. What are some main questions they need to ask themselves before jumping into the management role?
Well, first and foremost, do you really want the job? So often we take a look and say, well, it's more money.
Yep.
You go, great. Well, so who doesn't want more money? Who's got too much money, right? And so you say, well, the money sounds great. I just ask a lot of questions. What are the responsibilities? Who's on the team? What are the strengths of the team? What are the deficits on the team? Is there anybody that's a real problem? So that I know coming in, say, look, you're going to be managing 10 people. By the way, 2 people are on probation. Ooh. Great. For what? You know, so ask a lot of questions, because particularly as a first time manager, you do not want to fail.
Right.
You know, and by the way, if you get in that situation and it doesn't work out, fail fast. Get out of there fast and just say, you know what? When I came into this, these were my expectations. It's completely different. This really isn't what I signed up for. And I apologize. I should have never taken this job.
But do you think there's a lot of scenarios, again, not to toot my own horn, but that you're actually a good manager, your environment was just horrible, you didn't have good guidance, and your director didn't respect you enough?
Yeah, sure. And listen, it's not that, you know, it's like anything. It's right place, right time, you know.
Yep.
And you can, it's, I know sports analogies are overused, but you know, you can have players that just suffer and suffer and suffer and go to a new team and have a new manager and have a new opportunity, and they flourish.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, look, it's not that they forgot how to play the game. They were just in the wrong system.
Yep.
Right? They weren't using them right. So it's, to me, it's do your homework before you take the job. Because the knee-jerk reaction, particularly when you're young and you're moving up in the organization, you want to get promoted, promoted, promoted. You know, we have a terrible disease in the West. And it's, I'll be happy when.
Yes.
I'll be happy when I make a little more money, when I get that next promotion, when I get a nicer car, when we move into a bigger house, you know, when I get married, when I have three kids, whatever it is. Enjoy where you are now and be careful. You know, you're going to live a long time. You know, you don't have to be a director by the time you're 23. You don't have to be a VP before you're 30. Do you know what I mean? Or before you're 25. So take your time, enjoy the journey. I'm doing a lot of reading on just what creates real happiness. And deep and meaningful relationships are you know, one of the most important keys. Well, you know, are you going to leave a situation where you really do have great relationships and you're doing meaningful work for another 10 grand a year? Yeah. I mean, can you literally put a price on what it is? You know, you can buy my misery for 10 grand. Right? I mean, I'm doing great. I love what I do. But for another 10 grand, and I will tell you, Jacob, when I was in college, I remember I had a number.
Okay.
And I was very sanguine. I grew up in sales, right? It's all about the numbers.
Yep.
And I said to myself, you know, if you paid me X amount of dollars, I'd do anything. Like you could, I would clean porta potties if that were the number, because that number to me was security and wealth. Well, it's so funny. I actually got a job that paid me more than that.
Okay.
And I was so miserable. My wife literally pulled me aside and said, I don't care what we're doing, but you're not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you are miserable. They are miserable. You're making everybody around you miserable. Mm-hmm. It's not who you are. Find something else. And we did.
Here's a question. Would you have taken a job that paid you, let's say, $20,000 less than that job just to be happy?
Again, you'd have to answer a lot of questions. That is not an uncommon scenario. Yep. People will take less to get away from a toxic boss. Because it's just not worth it. You know, we've all had those jobs where, you know, we bring that misery home.
Yes.
You know, and we've had those jobs where we bring the joy home. You know, our work, the book we wrote before Anxiety at Work is called Leading with Gratitude. Mm-hmm. And gratitude is probably my favorite word. You know, when people are grateful and they're humble and they're appreciative and they give credit where credit is due, everything gets better. Mm-hmm. And I carry around with me, I know this is just audio, but these little gratitude stones.
Nice.
And when people are doing a good job, whether they're at the car wash or the dry cleaner, or, you know, I'm at a conference speaking or whatever, I love to give them a little gratitude stone. And I always ask them, I say, so why do you think it's a stone? And they go, stability. I get, yeah, that's part of it. I said, what happens when you throw a stone into a pond? What happens to the water? It ripples.
Yep.
So just like gratitude. So if you're a supervisor or a leader listening to this podcast, set a goal to send your people home happy. Send them home happy. And how do you do that? You reduce their anxiety levels. You increase your communication. You let them know what their value is, how the company's doing, where are you going, where they fit. And ask questions like, hey, where do you want to be 2 to 3 years from now?
Yep.
And how can I help you get there? Who doesn't want to work for that boss?
Absolutely. No, Chester, I thought you put it beautifully when you get that promotion, because I was the same way, where it's just like, oh my God, I've never been a manager before. This is going to be so cool, more money. But again, know what you're getting yourself into, ask a lot of the questions. And I don't know if you would ever like want to get this in documentation, but be like, okay, I have to have a bigger caseload because we need to, let's say, hire another counselor. So for a short period of time, you're going to have to endure this and that. I guess you need to know you're going to be okay with that. And you need to know that there needs to be a deadline where, again, you're not going to be taking all those clients, like expectations. And if that director does not follow through with those expectations, then maybe it's time to get a new job.
Exactly. And you're really spot on, Jacob, when you say, look, as I take this job as a manager, what does success look like? Yeah. Like, what do I need to deliver for you to say, man, that Jacob, he's killing it. Yeah. You know, is it caseloads? Is it reducing caseloads, right? Like you're actually helping people to the point where they don't need their counseling anymore. I mean, you know, is it getting people underneath you promoted? Is it growing your team? What is it? Like, what is success? Because I need to know how I'm going to be measured. Mm-hmm. So often we take a job. Oh, I'm a manager. Is it doing what? I'm managing people. Okay, so what are the goals? Well, you know, and if you hesitate and you don't know what those are, if you don't know what success looks like, that's a real red flag. We just need somebody to be a supervisor. Not your guy.
You're right. You made a great point where, let's say, an organization's goal is get more money, get more clients in your treatment center, but the new manager's goals are motivations are, I want good quality care for my clients so they get better. I don't care about how many clients we have at the facility. I want to provide good care so they get the best help. Well, again, the values don't interline because, again, not saying all, but 95% of the treatment centers want clients in those beds.
Yeah. Yeah. And you got to know that. So if you're judged on how many patients and how many people you're counseling, then great. And if you're comfortable with that and saying, hey, here's how we're going to get them and here's my team. And now you've got a roadmap.
Yep.
You know, you got something to strive for.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, Chester, I want to go in a little bit different direction. Let's say you have the manager role and you see that one of your workers is struggling, and it could be maybe a mental health issue, an addiction issue. One, what does that look like in your experience? And two, how do you approach that coworker to, again, possibly give them the help that they need?
Yeah, great question. You know, one of the things that we looked at were a lot of the numbers, you know, pre and post pandemic. Pre-pandemic, about 18% of employees, workers said they suffered from some kind of anxiety disorder. Now, a disorder is I can't do my job. Mm-hmm. It's not like, hey, I get anxious. Everybody gets anxious. By the end of 2021, that had jumped to 30%.
Wow.
It's a huge jump. Now, when you look at workers in their 20s, it was 42%. Mm-hmm. So numbers kept getting bigger and bigger. A shocking number was 50% of millennials and 75% of Gen Z said that they had quit a job due to mental health reasons. So you ask yourself, so why are you quitting? Because, you know, like if 42% of my workers in their 20s showed up with broken legs, we talk about broken legs. We probably take away their skateboards. You know, what's going on here? Because it's visual. You can see it. It was an accident, right? Take time, get better. Mental health, there's still this stigma that if I admit that I'm burned out or I can't take it, that you're weak.
Yeah.
That, you know, you knew this was going to be a high pressure job. Are you telling me that you're not who I thought you were? You know, are you going to disappoint me? And so rather than talk about it, people would just quit, take some time off, go find another job.
Yeah.
The job market's still pretty good. It's not like, you know, if you're in the healthcare that you can't find a job. There's openings everywhere.
Right.
So what we talk to about coworkers and managers is look for changes in behavior. Mm-hmm. Because, and this is the absolute number, Jacob, 90% of employees will not talk about mental health because of the stigma.
Yep.
So how do you figure out changes in behavior? Now, anybody can have a bad day, right?
Right.
But if somebody who's never late all of a sudden is late all the time, somebody who never loses their temper starts losing their temper, and it kind of persists, right? Then the question is, so how do you start that conversation? Because if I go up to you and go, look, Jacob, I read this book, Anxiety at Work, and you check all the boxes, man. You're anxious. I know you are, right? So what do we do about it? People will pull back even further. Well, what are you talking about? I'm not anxious. You're anxious, you know? So the idea is you say, how do you start the conversation? And you start the conversation, and I hope if you're listening, write this down. It's, I've noticed. You know what, Jacob? I've noticed that for somebody who never loses their temper, you're kind of a hair trigger these days.
Yep.
How can I help? I've noticed. Because when I say I've noticed, it gets interpreted as I care.
Yeah.
I'm paying attention. You know what? I've just noticed that, man, you've never been late and you've been late three times this week. What can I do to help? Do we need to adjust your schedule? And then once I believe that you care about me, I'm more likely to open up.
Yes. That's spot on. And then once you get that, again, realization and that rapport building, you notice that they care, then I'm more willing to like open up more and tell you what's really going on. And have you ever been a part of a situation where they maybe tell you a little bit too much? And again, you still want to show that you care, but you need those boundaries as in, well, I'm not your therapist, but again, I'll support you getting help if you need it.
Yeah, just listen. People don't want the solution 9 times out of 10. They just want you to listen. And then do you know what the resources are, so that you can marshal those resources? Are they have counselors? Do they have, therapists? Is there time off and on and on? So those are the suggestions we find are the most helpful.
And normally there's like mental health coworker hotlines, right? For a lot of places.
It depends where you work and what the offerings are. I mean, it's all over the board.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I read this quote from Donald Trump back in the day where he was telling about a scenario about a young woman who he thought who had a lot of promise in one of his businesses. But again, she got there the first day and she looked at the environment. It was very fast paced and she quit right away. And he said, I totally respect her for that. And she's going to be very successful somewhere else. Now, in your personal opinion, do you feel like it's okay to quit a job within the first week, or should you at least try to stick it out for a little bit longer, even though you're uncomfortable?
You know, there used to be a real stigma attached to that. I don't think there is anymore. As long as you've got a good reason, right? Hey, you know what? The job isn't what I expected. Not the parameters. Right. I should have been more careful. I apologize. This isn't working out for me.
Yep. Yeah, you're right, because you know what you like. And again, there shouldn't be that shame attached to it where it's like, I'm not going to suffer just because of what others might think.
Right. And that perception of jumping from job to job, it's just not there anymore. I remember my son calling me and he said, Dad, I've only been in this job a couple of years. What do you think? I said, nobody cares anymore.
Right.
If it's a better opportunity, it's a great place for you to go and your family, you know, and leave on good terms. And he did. It's, you know, my generation, if you had five jobs, that was a lot. You know, my kids will have 30 jobs. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, again, going back to what you're talking about earlier between, like, let's say the millennials compared to the baby boomers, where the mentality is just different, where they would stick it out more. And I guess, I don't know if there's been a lot of research when it comes to anxiety in the workplace, but again, was it just the mentality of how they were brought up that was just different from, again, the millennials or the Gen Zs?
You know, it's such a good thought to explore. I really encourage managers to know their team's stories. Where did you come from? How did you get here? What do you want to accomplish while you're here? And where do you want to be in 2 or 3 years? You know, when you know people's stories, like you say, you know, some people come from ridiculously happy homes. Some people, you know, didn't. Some people really struggled. Some people didn't struggle. You know, some people have just been through a divorce or they've been through a really tough relationship. Knowing those stories, filling in those gaps, helps you as a manager, supervisor, leader, lead people in a way that's meaningful to them. You know, old school was kind of we treat everybody the same because that's fair. Right. Well, if I do that for you, I'm going to have to do it for everybody. It just doesn't hold water anymore. Everybody is different. You remember the old book, The Jordan Rules?
Yeah.
They go, they're treating Jordan different than everybody else. They go, yeah. You know he's Michael Jordan, right? I mean, of course you're going to treat him differently, right? He's Wayne Gretzky. You know, pick your sport. Of course the rules are different. They're extremely, you know, talented and they deliver. So I think a big key to that is know your players. And by knowing your players, you know their stories.
Yeah. You know, it's also interesting, too. It's good to have, I guess, we'll say players on your team that, again, know and accept their role where, okay, you're a sixth man at best, but you want to be Michael Jordan.
Yeah. Well, and listen, you see this all the time, right? And in your situation, the woman that didn't get the promotion. And so what was her reaction? See, it's really interesting. You know, I think your true character comes out not in good times, but in bad times.
Yeah.
So here was a person that felt like they should be a manager, got passed over. And what was their reaction? Sabotage. Wow. If that doesn't tell you everything you need to know in a heartbeat, then not only was it a good thing that she didn't become a supervisor, it's probably not a good thing to have her on your team, period. Because if her reaction is, or him, you know, it could be whoever, if I don't get what I want, I'm going to make your life miserable. Well, great. You know what? I'm gonna recommend you to my number one competitor because I want you to go over there and make their lives miserable, as miserable as you made mine.
Yeah. Because you know what's weird is that I have such respect for older people. That's the way, like, my dad, my mom raised me. He's like, you always respect your elders. So, again, that was another difficult aspect, too, to, again, discipline, like, an older woman. It just put me in an awkward situation. And it's funny because, like, when I was like disciplining her, one, it's hard for me because again, I'm a new manager, a new supervisor. So it's going to be hard regardless, but then to do it to like an older person was just weird. Like I honestly, like I feel bad for some of the things that I said. I didn't never yell or swore at her, but it's like, I found it to be disrespectful, even though she deserved the redirection.
Well, and here's the thing, you know, I love the Buddhist admonition that mm-hmm. says every word that goes through your mouth should go through three doors. Mm-hmm. And the first door is it true?
Yeah.
Second, is it necessary? The third one is it kind? I mean, there's no mm-hmm. reason that you can't pull somebody in and say, listen, I understand we're in a tough situation here. I know you wanted this job and you didn't get it. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. I need you to help. I need us to be a team. I need to know that you're cheering for me and I'm cheering for you. And again, and if you can't do that, like seriously, if you're just so upset and you're going to bring this negativity and you're going to undermine, you know, the team and our base, then we've got to have a different conversation. Mm-hmm. So I've got to know, do you want to be a part of the team? Are you going to help me so that I can help you so that we can help our patients? It's really that simple. Now, that's true. It's necessary. And you've put it in a way that's kind. Say, look, this is what we need as a team. This is what I need from you. Now, if you can't do it, let me know. And by the way, I'm going to find out in the next couple of weeks, one way or another anyway. So you've really got to decide, do you want to be on this team? Do you want to do the work? And can you do it with me? And if you can't, then let's have a different conversation. Let's find you something else. Wish you well, you know, hope you have a great career. You just can't work here because it's not going to work. I'm going to be miserable. You're going to be miserable. The ripple effects of our patients aren't going to be miserable. You're going to be talking to my director. She's going to be miserable.
Yep.
You know, and is that what you want? Well, nobody wants. Look, when the story is told, when you really get down to what does everybody in the world have in common, we all want the same thing. We just want to be happy, right? We want to know that what we do is valued, that what we do matters, that we believe it's important, and that we're recognized for our work. Mm-hmm. And you know, and if we can check those boxes and work together as a team, again, you know, be kind. It costs you nothing. It's easy to do. And it's a much better way to manage. And it doesn't mean you're soft. Alan Mulally's not soft, you know, because at the end of the conversation, what was it? Look, we're going to do this in a really kind and thoughtful manner.
Yeah.
And if you can't do it, you'll have to move on. Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah. And I think it's, again, so important for the director to, again, get involved if that counselor person's not, like, being responsive and he or she continues to go to the director, where I think there needs to be action taken. And if there's not any action taken by the director, then I don't know.
Yeah, and here's the point, though. It doesn't have to be brutal. It doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to, you know, well, we got to hold their feet to the fire. Well, why would you do that? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you sit down and say, hey, look, here's the situation. Yeah. You know it. I know it. The director knows it. We got to figure this out. We just got to figure it out. Can you do this? Are you willing to do that? And if not, why? Say, well, I'll just never get over the fact that I never got promoted. Fair enough. Where would you like to work? Because you can't work here. Well, what do you mean? I said, well, look, you just painted this scenario. You're going to go behind my back. You're going to be miserable. I'm going to be miserable. The director's going to be miserable. I really feel bad that you didn't get the job. So given that you are never going to be happy, let's find somewhere where you can be happy. Let me help you get there. Well, what if I want to stay here? Nope, not an option. Not going to happen.
You know? Right. No,
there's a wonderful book. I have to share this with you, Jacob. The wonderful book a friend of mine wrote called The Freedom of Constraints. And it's wonderful because when you know what the boundaries are, you have tremendous freedom within those boundaries. Yeah. You know, I'm a very, very spiritual person brought up in my faith. And I never forget my friends would say, well, boy, you have a lot of restrictions. You know, in my faith, we don't drink, we don't smoke, we don't, you know, drink tea or coffee. We don't take drugs, right? And they say, well, what if you wanted to smoke? Why would I want to smoke? Well, I have the freedom to smoke. I said, yeah, and the freedom to kill myself. I just had never been, you know. So, well, what if you wanted to have wine with dinner? I go, I suppose I could, but that's not the way I was brought up. Alcohol is just not a part of my ritual.
Right.
And they say, well, all these restrictions. I said, you know, you can look at the Ten Commandments as restrictive or liberating. Now, I look, no, thou shalt not kill. Very liberating for me. I'll never go to jail, right? Thou shalt not steal. Very liberating, right? The other commandments that I love is thou shalt not covet. Why be envious? Mm-hmm. Say, is envious, is that the road to happiness, right? So on and on. I believe that, you know, even people that say they're atheists or agnostic, I think we all have a spiritual side.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's nature or it's meditation, whatever it might be. And we all need to be in tune with that. And when our spirit is out of line, in other words, when our values don't line up with the values of where we work and who we work with, that's unhappiness. And yes. I love the freedom of constraints. When I know what the boundaries are, wow. You know, it's like I love to play tennis.
Yep.
You know, well, those lines are very restrictive. I go,
yep.
And very liberating. Like, I know if I hit it there, it's in. If I hit it there, it's out. This is a point. This isn't a point. It's very, you know, it's very straightforward. So, you know, I think that as leaders and managers, we've got to get and really embrace the freedom of constraints. Mm-hmm. And your constraints are your mission, vision, and values. And those aren't restrictive. They're liberating. It allows you to attract the right people that have the right mindset, the right attitude, and they can flourish.
Beautifully said, Chester. Beautifully said. Well, I just want to say, too, it's been an absolute honor to have you on the show, Chester. I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, no, listen, it's been a pleasure. As I said before, Adrian and I are always anxious to get the word out about how do you deal with mental health. You know, we've got a wonderful podcast called Anxiety at Work. It's free. You can find it wherever you find your podcast. Our book is a wonderful book. We have an audio version, digital version. Any way you consume your books, you can find it. And I'd like to recommend one other thing. Follow me on LinkedIn. We have got a great newsletter we put out twice a month. That'd be way too much. Twice a month, called The Gratitude Journal. Nice. And of the 8 strategies in dealing with anxiety and mental health, the 8th strategy is gratitude. You can't be in a state of anxiety and a state of gratitude at the same time. And my father was always wise. He says, look, if the choice between anxiety and gratitude, pick gratitude. You're going to be a lot happier. So never stop learning and being curious. And boy, if there's something in those podcasts that can help you, if there's something in our books that can help you, and sign up for the newsletter. It's free. You know, we have almost 250,000 people have signed up. Nice. And the engagement and the conversation is awesome. We bring in guest writers and we promote different events that we go to and stuff. It's a great little community. And lastly, as if that wasn't enough, Jacob. And if you buy this, you'll get some steak knives. No, the last one is thecultureworks.ai. And that's a community that we've put together. Again, it's a free community where you can find a safe place to talk about mental health. So LinkedIn, our books, our podcast, and thecultureworks.ai. I hope it's been helpful today. There's lots of helps out there. And it's all happening because, Jacob, you invited me to be on your podcast, and I'm grateful for that.
And I'm grateful that you agreed to be here. I greatly appreciate it. I know I got a lot out of it, and I can almost guarantee you my listeners did. And to all my listeners, I'll put all of Chester's information on the show notes, the email, the websites, the books. So it will all be one click away.
Excellent. Well, take care, my friend. Be well.
I just want to thank Chester for another amazing behavioral health integration episode. He's an amazing special guest. I just want to thank all of my listeners for your support. And just to inform everyone that the information expressed in this episode was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice. If you do find yourself struggling with any type of mental health or addiction issues, please seek the care of a medical doctor or a licensed mental health therapist. And if anyone has any further questions for me, you can reach me at my email address, behavioralhealthintegration121@gmail.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn at Jacob Minig, where you will find more educational posts on psychotherapy, trauma, and addiction. And finally, you can follow me on my website, which is behaviorhealthintegration.org. I also want to inform everyone that there is a great new device out there called Comigo. It's a breathing device meant to control and manage your breathing rates and the depth of your breathing as you inhale and exhale to, again, help relieve any type of anxiety and stress-like symptoms. And if you do put the BHI podcast into the promo code, you get $30 off this amazing device. It is a once-in-a-lifetime deal, and you will not be disappointed. All right, everyone, until next time, have a good day. Bye.